Welcome to Spiritual Aliveness with Joni. The purpose of this podcast is to have conversations with an array of teachers, spiritual lightworkers, healers, and thought leaders who all have one thing in common. They are here to share their knowledge and their powerful energy and tools to help us help ourselves to live with aliveness and joy. Today's guest is Wanda Buckner, who is a certified hypnotherapist and Reiki and Healing Touch comfort therapist. And fascinatingly, she's also a communicator and healer of animals. I believe that in our conversation today, we will see just how deeply connected and intertwined the healing journeys of humans and animals truly are. So let's get started. Welcome, Wanda. I'm so happy that we put this together.
Hi, Joni. It's a privilege to be here.
Oh, well, I'm so happy to do this. This is a fascinating subject to me, and I have clients and family members who have questions for you later, which I'll get to. But I watched your intro video on your website and would love for you to share with the listeners a little bit about your story and how you began all of this. Where did that begin?
Well, this is certainly never a place I meant to end up. I was not on a journey of seeking. I had a wonderful life, the most marvelous man. We dreamed of living our golden years out together. We traveled. We enjoyed. My therapy dog worked in the hospital. It was everything I could want. I had my own business doing grant writing, and it looked so golden. And then out of the blue, on a routine x-ray, they felt, the doctors, that they had found a spot of cancer on his lung. And so even though he was older, even though there were no other indications of cancer, even though the decision was entirely left to him, he decided, and I supported him, in getting the surgery that would do a lung resection. It's a common surgery. It's often done in these cases. The only glitch came that when they actually opened the lung up, it was not cancer. It was pneumonia, the treatment of which is steroids. And due to it, it was devastating. It would have been all right if there had been no complications. Because we had planned, I had taken a leave from my business for 6 weeks. We had planned 5 days in the hospital, recuperation with physical therapy, and we would resume our life again. But there were complications. And it is so ironic because they did the surgery because he was so healthy and he had such a will to live. And so there we were. After the complications, he was left respirator dependent. And after 5.5 months, having never gone outside after entering the hospital for that operation, he chose to have the respirator turned off.
Wow. That is so, it's sad, but it's also so interesting that something similar has happened to the entire planet in a way right now with the pandemic. The respirator and the, it just feels connected in a way.
It's so ironic. And I had such mixed emotions. I was so angry. I was angry that we hadn't got a second opinion, that no one had brought it up, that we hadn't thought of it. I was angry at the diagnosis. And honestly, we had people ask if I was going to sue, but no one had bad intentions. No one. It wasn't like someone came in drunk, you know, and misread it. It was the two items looked alike under the microscope in the same team. It wasn't just one person. It's always reread by a team. They are the ones who did the second reading also. But the point is, and I'm not the only one who has faced this, is that my life as I dreamed it and as I knew it was destroyed in that moment. it was like a kaleidoscope that I had this beautiful picture, and then all of the same elements but one were there, but I could not find that beautiful picture again. And it threw me into a state of limbo. I was adrift. And it come to find out that that pausing from my busy life, from my full life, is really what brought me to my next life. I could have been, you know, a full-time caretaker for the grandkids. I could have taken over the garden. I didn't have a regular job because I was independent. I could have gone back to work, but I had no pull to go forward. And the grief group that I was in, many of us were like that. It wasn't that we were suicidal. It was more that if I were in a terrible accident, I knew that I did not have the will to live, to pull through that. And so in that vacuum, it allowed something different to happen. So in the grief group, there was a lot of cancer, a lot of death, because the people there had been caregivers for their spouses, and I learned so much there. When I started, I felt I was the most wronged woman in the world, right? Mm. People would say, oh, my husband was sick so long. And I'd say, I wish he had been sick.
At least you have a reason. Right. Reasonable.
Definitely bitter. Hospice wasn't in because he wasn't dying. And so there was no cancer support group because he didn't have cancer. And so it was, I just felt really sorry for myself. But then in that group, I got some perspective. There was a man there whose wife died in childbirth. When does that happen? I mean, it had just happened. He had the baby with him, a newborn.
Wow.
Another woman, her brother, died in jail. Another woman, her husband had had Alzheimer's for years. And in one sense, he had been dying and dead for years. Another woman, her husband, Agent Orange, shortened his life before he could get through the approval of his case for. And so I'm like, girl, you need to look at yourself here. You're so lucky in that Lloyd was older when he died. He was healthy, and we did not have to go through dementia. We did not have to go through me pushing him around with oxygen in a wheelchair. He left at peace with life and with death, and he said to me he had had a good life. Well, I knew what his life was. And the early years had been so challenging, but he bore no ill will towards it. And he said to me that dying was easier on the dying than the living.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my grief group, where we had four people die of cancer, one of them, a man that I knew had been diagnosed with 3 months to live, and his sister was on dialysis 3 days a week, and she had decided that she would quit dialysis, that she could not stand it anymore. And he was going to go to the family reunion, the last big party, and tell his family that he too had a terminal diagnosis. And he asked me to go to support him, which I did. And I met his sister, wonderful woman. We really hit it off. And that night, she did not go to dialysis. So when we went over the next morning, she was lying in front of the refrigerator, spewing anger and hate and terrible things about the family. And she would not get up from the floor. And apparently she had been lying there for hours. And hospice was in because this was a predetermined decision. And the nurse was there with her notebook open, and she said that my new friend had had a psychic break and that hospice could not come in under those circumstances, and the family needed to call 911. And she closed her book and she left. Right. And so, and the family is just sitting there in shock. I'm the only one who doesn't know what's true, what's not true. I'm the only neutral person there. I asked if they had a doctor, no, a minister, no. And so I went over and knelt beside her at the refrigerator floor. And for the first time in my life, I said, "I have healing hands. May I touch you?" And she said, "No," not while I'm so angry.
Interesting.
Right. So it was a really short career there.
But it didn't deter you.
No. So eventually I talked her back into her bedroom, and there we just sort of talked. And then I was absolutely compelled to run my hands above her body, from above her head to below her feet. And I did this about 3 times, and she calmed and settled and slept. Mm-hmm. And so I just tiptoed out of the room. I came back later that night, and I would go in and close the bedroom door and talk to her. And I didn't tell anyone what was happening because I had no idea what it was.
Mm.
And as her condition worsened, her family began to call me and ask if I would come over. And I would go over and close the door, and we would chat. She would show me things important to her. And then eventually, I would run my hands above her body. So by the 5th day, hospice had finally officially come in, but they hadn't arrived yet. There had been no medication during this whole time, nothing to ease discomfort. And there had not been any aid. Well, the bath aid showed up before the medication did, and the family decided she needed a bath. Well, they called me because she was in great distress. She was bleeding from her mouth where she had bitten her cheek. She was rigid and shaking, and I came over and again I got her more comfortable, and again I ran my hands above her body and she calmed. And she died about an hour and a half later, having never had any medication, but being physically comfortable until she had the bath. None of us knew that her skin would have been terribly sensitive. We just didn't know. And so nobody had done anything except with the best of intentions. But I invited her family in, and when they all came in, and it was a lovely end of life. They played music. She was surrounded by her family. She died peacefully. And her daughter asked me where I had learned that, because she wanted to be able to do it too. And I said, "I have no idea what it is." Hmm. And so because my friend had a diagnosis of terminal cancer, I picked up a book for him that same week about cancer treatments. And I was reading it through, and one chapter talked about alternative treatments. And within it, there was a very small paragraph on healing touch or therapeutic touch. And it described exactly what my experience had been. And it said that some people without training could do this. And I'm like, wow. And so because I volunteered with my dog in the hospital, I bought a book on therapeutic touch. And when I had to go in for my annual TB check, I brought the book with me to read while I waited my turn. And right there in the hospital, on the credenza right beside me, was a brochure for healing touch class that weekend in that hospital.
There are no accidents. One thing after another led you along this path. It's beautiful.
Well, and a little scary, I might say.
Yeah. Now it wouldn't be. You'd go, of course.
I'm like, so I get it. So I never planned to practice. But I did attend the class, and because I come from a research background, I was the one with my hand always there in the air. Have there been any studies to support that? How do we know that's true? And this wonderful patient teacher. And they offered level two right afterwards. And of course, I took that. And then I worked with a practice group twice a month in my community. And it was really during that time that I believe I recovered from Lloyd's death. I would say, when it was my turn to be on the table, is there anything bothering you? And I'd say, my neck is a little tight. And then I would cry on the table, and they could feel that deep grief that was within me and was being released. So by the time I got to, then they brought level four, level three to my community, so I support the group. And all the time I'm just sort of plodding along because of, it's interesting. It's a support group of healers. And then when I got to level five, you have to do 100 documented sessions to go to level five. And I didn't know if I could do this. My doctorate was in educational leadership. And this was a medical model. And there were things on the intake like asking people if they were constipated. And I'm like, I am so not going to ask someone that. You know? And so I gave away 100 sessions. Now, it didn't occur to me I could do 20 people five times. I just put it out there that anyone who wanted a session was welcome to come. I worked from a bedroom in my home. I had my dog there. And because I come from a research background, I set up a sort of a little survey. And I said, yeah, it's free. But if you come for three or more sessions, I ask you to fill out this survey, and I want you to be really honest so that I can improve my practice and make a decision here. Like, did my dog bother them? Did I talk too much? Well, of course I talked too much, but they were quite polite about it. Right? Because I felt I had to justify why I could do this work. They didn't care. They really didn't. And I also felt that I really wanted to know from the client level, did it make a difference? Well, the results were so exceptional. They were like a third of the people got 75 to 100% of what they had wanted when they came. It was amazing. And one of that is giving a presentation to some medical doctors and psychiatrists and so on. And one of them said, well, that's the placebo effect. I'm like, yeah, self-healing, you know.
Sounds good to me.
Right, I love it. And so what really changed my mind, though, were that 100% of them said they received benefits beyond what they came for.
Very validation.
Similar, yeah, very similar to me with my neck ache, really recovering from grief.
That and makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's very timely right now that you're talking about this, because you said something like, in the vacuum, something different was allowed to come in. And right now, grief is happening in so many ways, through isolation and illness and financial loss and death of loved ones and loss of jobs and even the way our way of lives. Everything is shifted and changed, and people are on edge. So how would you recommend to them to get to the place you got in being grateful for allowing something new to come in, like trusting that process? Because that's really what's happening for people.
It is. And it is not that we get to one place and we we stay there forever in that own kind of thing.
You know? I wish it was.
Right. Let's be realistic about this. Some days are harder than others. Some situations are more challenging than others. What it reminds me of, are you familiar with Gaudi's work, the architect?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he made these fantastical buildings that actually, I went to see his great cathedral that's still in the process of being built. It was started in 1858, I believe, and will be mm-hmm. finished in 2025, hopefully. And so I'm in this huge, cavernous cathedral. It's missing walls. It has staircases that go up to nothing. There's no room at the end. There's no door.
Interesting.
It's really strange. And you can't, for myself, when I'm down on the ground floor, I cannot see a pattern. I can't see the vision. I can't feel the sacredness. And then just a couple weeks ago, there was a picture that came through on Facebook of that cathedral, and it was taken from above. And it was beautiful. It was extraordinary. It all made sense. I could see the pattern. I could see the reason. I could see how it all came together. So just like myself with Lloyd's death or the present now, we are on the ground floor. We are not up high enough to see the greater perspective.
So that's I was just going to say, one of my dear spiritual healers and teachers always says to look at things from the higher perspective, from the spiritual perspective. And that puts such a great visual on it for me, how you just described that whole thing. It's beautiful.
Well, that's why some people, I do mediumship also. And the wonderful thing about mediumship, people die in messy ways. You know, it would be lovely if it were all gathered around the bedside and peaceful, an elderly person who was ready to die, and the family realizes their life is complete and all. But lots of deaths do not happen that way. Mm-hmm. Lots of deaths are surrounded by chaos. And so when people come to talk to someone who has passed, they're looking for understanding and oftentimes for forgiveness. One person came in, and the end of her dearly beloved's life had been him tearing the oxygen off of his face at the same time that she's trying to get it back on, and this hospital staff is trying to save him and keep him going, and he's fighting at every step of the way, and he dies. And she felt so guilty about that. She couldn't save him, and that was one part of it, but the other part was that it wasn't peaceful and beautiful. But from the point of view of someone who is dead, he looked at her and he said, "I know everything you did was done from love."
That's beautiful.
Yeah, and true.
Yes. So I would love for you to, is there more on your story? I don't want to interrupt that. But I do want to make sure that we get to how you segued into working with animals as well, and how the human and animal experience is so intertwined. And then I actually have questions from people about their animals, if you would be willing to answer those.
Oh, absolutely. I will tell you just a little bit more. So I'm doing all of these sessions, right? Mm-hmm. And I begin to see things I don't believe in. I see Archangel Michael, I see St. Francis, I see video clips from people's lives, I hear their dead parents talk, and I am like, I am so not going here.
It's a little far out.
Right. So I say to the universe up there, if you have something to say to these people, talk to them. I refuse. I will not talk. You talk to them. Whoever. And I began coughing in sessions to the extent that I would have to leave the room. I would be doubled over, coughing so badly.
Because you weren't speaking?
Exactly.
Ah.
But I didn't learn that on the first person. It took me a few. And so then I understood that some people need a messenger. And that's what I am. I'm a messenger. And so when people say, well, I can't hear my dog, and maybe I can't hear my deceased son, it's not your fault. It's not something that you need to feel like you should do. You may be able to hear someone else's. We all have the ability to be. We're all psychic. We're all healers. It's just been layered over with many, many things. And it's okay to contact a messenger and see what they have to say.
I love that. And I completely concur. Everything is energy and everything is interconnected. Some of us are able to hear better than others, hear, quote unquote.
Right. Well, we should not be surprised. I mean, there are people who can play the cello so much better than I could ever. I could study a dozen years. We have all different capacities and different strengths and different inborn abilities. But I would also like to add that we can all be healers where we are. An accountant who helps a family heal their finances so that they can have a home. That's being a healer. I worked in the schools, and I did the discipline, and so young people would be sent to me who had, you know, been really bratty. But I could be a healer in that. I could listen. I could show them a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, as you're speaking, I think of the people who were behind the grocery counter, behind the cash register when everything went wonky, and they were there. And it just, to me, that was healing, you know, that everything continued on. These frontline people, those people are healers. Even, I mean, especially the nurses and doctors, obviously. But I love your perspective that everybody's really has the capacity to heal from wherever they are.
Yes, you think of work teams that have, you know, our work team is oftentimes our second family. We spend more time with them than we do at home sometimes. And so the team leader who gathers his group together via the technology and checks in with people with how they're doing and allows not just business, but allows people to talk what it's like not to see each other, not to have interactions daily. I know many single women who are isolated in their homes, who have long retired, and they are missing their social supports. And many older people are not technologically savvy, or the place where they are living may not have the capacity to have it in each of their rooms. It's very isolating for both young people and older people. It really does, as you said earlier, bring us right up against what is it about our life that we value. And maybe someone who is an introvert who has always said, well, I really don't like crowds and so on, now they know that they really do like to have some interaction with people.
Mm.
It challenges us to find other ways.
Absolutely. A lot of people are struggling, and I know you talk about self-hypnosis tools and that kind of thing to clients. Maybe you can give us a couple of life hacks, tips during this time to calm ourselves and to take care of the anxiety part of all this. What would you say?
That's a more complex question than it might seem on the surface. There are all sorts of self-help things. I have so noticed I could be listening to a podcast every moment of every day, and really high quality ones, which have lots of great advice. And I also know that within myself, sometimes I'm like, I cannot listen to one more inspirational.
Me too. I'll do it like days on end, hours on end, and then that's it. I'm saturated.
Well, and also because it is contrasted with what we see on the news.
Yes.
So what we see for self-care, there's this wonderful illustration. So I was in a spiritual development class, and we were each given a lump of clay and told to make something out of it. And so I made this multi-petaled rose, you know, three-dimensional, you know. And the person next to me made a banana. So
very simple.
I was feeling quite proud of myself. And then the next part of it, we explained what our things meant to us, was to destroy it. You know, just smash it up. And then we were asked, which felt better? Well, construction, right? But they're both equal. They're both equal. We have to have creation and destruction. We can't just keep adding and adding and adding to our lives. We have to let go of some things. It just doesn't work to make, like, people who are remodeling their homes at record rates right now. It means destroying something. It may be knocking out all the cabinets from that kitchen that your family sat around the table for 20 years. But now's the time. That has to be destroyed in order for something new to take its place. And what is happening right now is there is a lot of destruction going on. Emotionally, physically, politically, with our social institutions. The way that business was done before is no longer good enough. And out of this destruction, something new will be created. And we have an opportunity here to be a part of that creation. Even from our own lives, where we're saying, I'm bored, I have nothing to do, I cannot watch another sitcom, I cannot listen to another inspirational broadcast. I need to be with myself in this present moment. There's the outdoors. There are more birds singing now than have in years. There are more animals being seen in the park. There are babies being born that would not have happened if we had not had this pause in human activity. We need to find those things that have been beyond our awareness and take pleasure in them. We don't need someone to tell us to do this. It's up to us to find it, to find where we can be part of the creation of our lives and the creation of the new life that is coming.
It's a very surrendered and open way to live life. So there's no trying to control things and make things happen or have things be different, but a place of, let's just see what unfolds here. I love the way you speak, by the way. It's just so soothing. I'm sitting here going, oh, she's so wonderful.
Thank you. So what my belief is that when people tell me things, it's not that they're telling me for me to solve it. They've often told their counselor, their medical doctor, their spouse. What they're doing is releasing it to the universe. And as it releases to the universe answers. And that's what they've been waiting for.